All right, Jerry Mason, the Kicking Lawyer, and I welcome you guys to another Law Talk. As always, if you haven't, please like, follow, subscribe to our content. We're available on all social media platforms, as well as podcast platforms, wherever you listen or watch podcasts. We're on TikTok. I always like to tell you, you can go over there and watch Josh do all the TikTok dances. We're at least on TikTok while it's legal. I guess we'll see how long that lasts. And then if you haven't already, please download Inside My Head by the band N.A. The Band. It's those local guys that we try to support. It's free. You just download it for free. Helps those guys out. So wherever you listen to music, please do that. We want to thank Michelle Allen. She's a longtime sponsor of the show and a good friend of ours. If you're buying, selling, renting, leasing real estate, she'd be glad to help you out. She's just generally a good community leader too. And then of course, Mason's High Octane Martial Arts. I've had a school in Covington for 30 years and now in Millington. So we have two locations to serve you. If you want to come learn to kick people in the face, just visit masonsmartialarts.com. And then I'm excited because this weekend we have the grand opening of Jam Books and Records, which is a new business we have. It's on the square in Covington. My guest today will be there, as well as a lot of other really cool people. Cool event, so please come check that out. And then last but not least, if you need any help with online presence, branding, commercials, video stuff, just visit masonitemarketing.com. And real quick, before I even introduce my guest, I do want to sort of expound real quick on the bookstore opening. So it's on the square here in town, April 20th, Saturday. And Josh, is this
going
to go?
This is going up after. This will be up Tuesday.
Oh, so we'll already have it done. Well, then never mind. I'm going to shut up. You missed it. If you're watching this, you missed it. And hopefully you missed out on a great event. And so joining me, who's going to be at the bookstore grand opening, is Alan Houndshell. Houndshell?
You got it. You
close. Just got to drop the D, right?
That's right. Drop the D.
Yeah. And Alan is a local author and aficionado, I'm sure, of master of multiple things that we're going to get into.
Some things.
Tell everybody, you know, where you're from, background, and then, of course, we can get into your books and stuff, too.
Oh, let's see. I'm originally from eastern Kentucky. I'm a transplant here.
Okay. So you're a bourbon guy, then.
Well, yeah, I've been to several. I've been and done it. I'm not a big connoisseur of bourbon, but I definitely have toured the distilleries in Kentucky because it's against the law not to.
Yeah, as a Kentuckian.
Yes, as a Kentuckian, you can probably, you know, get ostracized by most counties if you don't go do that.
But, yeah.
Grew up in a small community, you know, nothing going on there. Made Halls, Tennessee look like a metropolis. It was interesting, not much going on there, not a lot of writing, not a lot of culture, you know, to be intertwined into. And then just, you know, had limited exposure to things and then kind of got into an interest of, you know, like, you know, theater, drama, things over the years that I didn't end up going that way. I ended up going into psychology and getting a master's in that. And I wasn't intending to shrink people's head or anything like that, but I just kind of fell out that way, and I've been doing it for 30-some years. And then a couple of years ago, my wife's father passed away, and he had this hand-hewn cabin in Halls that he had built and her grandfather, and we said, you know, maybe it's time to move down from the big city of Lexington, Kentucky, down to
the big city of Halls, Tennessee.
To the big city of Halls, Tennessee, which is good. Everybody's very nice, likable. You know, it's different than living in Lexington, where no one is friendly most of the time to you. I miss the restaurants. I miss, you know, the large grocery stores and a lot of choices. But it certainly makes up for it for having, you know, amicable people to go around.
Mm-hmm. Huh. So from Kentucky to Halls, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Are you still, so did you, were you practicing as a psychiatrist or a psychologist or anything like that with your degree? Or?
I have a master's in clinical psychology from Morehead State University, another small town in Kentucky. And I have worked primarily for a community mental health facility for like over 30 years.
Okay.
Retirement is approaching. Have worked contractually mostly with the state doing things that relate to children being placed out of the home.
I got you. So it's interesting you say that. My law partner, Brian, his wife is a psychiatrist. And I have never, no offense to you, so please don't take offense here. I haven't met many, I shouldn't say all, I don't like absolutes, but I haven't met many people in the mental health field that aren't crazy.
Well, there is a reason we go into it.
Yeah.
If it's not us, it's our family.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, jokes aside, I'm very supportive of therapy and stuff like that. I used to not be. I used to be all pro macho, you shouldn't do that. And I was a cop for 12 years. And I used to say, you know, cops got to be tough. There's no such thing as PTSD or any of that. But there is.
I have issues
that stem from a lot of that. And I think it's important to work through that, too. So that's interesting. So does that training, you think, help you some with your writing?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, understanding pathology and just how people develop over time, and mental health disorders from depression to anxiety, ADHD, all those things just kind of give you an idea of giving you a good perspective when you're writing the voice of that character in the book. Because I've really not had any formal training per se for a writer, other than like numerous hundreds, thousands of assessments you do over time in your field, which is definitely not the writing you like doing for enjoyment. But it definitely drives it, because you kind of understand the underlying reason why people might do something. So, because I have a couple of books about serial killers, and how might, you know, someone who's a retired police officer, you know, react to something like this. And then I just kind of like combine additional issues, like the series that I've got is the Paisley Hunter series, which is my favorite. I started writing on for the last 3 years, and she had to retire because she has multiple sclerosis. It just was causing problems working, and she couldn't be, you know, quick enough in the field. And so she's a retired detective that just kind of moves to a small town. I write a lot of small town books. Depends on where I'm at, because they either take place in Kentucky or Tennessee a lot these days. And, you know, she's dealing with a cannibalistic serial killer who works for this horrible organized crime company that, you know, kind of rules the world and pays off everybody. And it's just, I don't know, I just enjoyed it. And working on actually the third book in that series, it's this one's set in Tennessee. The Devil Lives in Tennessee, so...
Well, and I intend to read some of your books. I told Jennifer earlier that we've been so busy trying to get ready with all the stuff that's going on that when I found out about you, I usually prefer, before I have you on, to have read your book, at least one of them, and I haven't done that yet. So I intend to, and I do hope to carry them at Jam Books and Records so that people can come in and check them out. So tell me a little more, though, about, because you've written several books.
Oh, yeah.
So are they all sort of like murder mystery, or what? Like, what are the genres that
they're
you have?
They're a hodgepodge, is what I call them. I'm a nerd. I'll just go on and say it, McGee.
You saw my office.
I saw your office. Yeah. I am a Trekkie. I don't deny it. Live long and prosper.
I was a Trekkie at one point. I sort of morphed more into Star Wars, but I like all of them.
I kind of go with all of them. More of a DC than a Marvel guy.
I'm more of a DC guy.
But like the Marvel movies better. Animation is better with DC.
I agree with that, too. See, we'll be best friends.
Yeah, see, we've got some same interests there. But I've got fantasy books. I've got one that's a witch detective. It takes place in a, you know, fictional Western Kentucky area where, you know, she wants to, Prudence Parker wants to be the first witch detective. They don't usually let them in, and they use them for their other powers and stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's a, you know, town being taken over by this horrible drug that's, it's got supernatural properties to it. So that's a fantasy. I've got the first book I wrote, what was it? Ancestry Awakenings, which is the first book that was like in my head 20 years ago, and I just sketched out stuff here and there about it. But it's a psychiatrist, and they have this occurrence of all these kids showing psychotic features, and it turns out it's all tied to supernatural powers, and her daughter happens to be one of these long line of people who have magical powers, like three in the whole, you know, planet Earth. So that one's in it. So fantasy, science fiction, real fiction, things that could actually take place that, you know, in the real world, you know, with nothing exaggerated in it. I wrote one that was called Bingo Baby, because my wife and I used to like going to play bingo from time to time. And you know, I just, it'd be funny if you know, you had someone so obsessed with bingo that she decides to have her baby in the middle of a bingo hall because she couldn't give up a jackpot. And then just follow that dysfunctional family and how they resolve that over time. And I do a lot of that. I write a lot of stories with strong women in them, just because I've noticed there's not a lot of stories always written like that out there. And I grew up, you know, family where, you know, your mothers were typically stronger, and they usually have the last word in a lot of cases and stuff. But, you know, it's empowering, you know, to write kind of like that. And when you've been in psychology, you kind of get so much diversity and culture and get to see, you know, okay, how does this person think? How does that person think? Regardless of, you know, race or gender, you just, you know, kind of envelop that when you're writing too.
So personal reading, what is it you would normally read? Because I assume as an author, you probably read a lot.
Not as much as I used to. James Patterson, Alex Cross series.
Okay.
I enjoy those. Christopher Pellini, the eldest series, I like. It's not Game of Thrones, but it's I like it. I used to follow with some Dean Koontz, and then Alan Dean Foster. I used to read some of his stuff. That is, he used to write a lot of Star Trek novels.
So do you feel like, it sounds like the reading hasn't necessarily influenced your writing as much as just life experience in general?
Life experience, just the field that I'm in. Understanding trauma, because I've got some books that deal with how people are dealing with trauma, because it is a trauma-informed world more than it ever was now. But that's been just a different journey in itself, just trying to understand that. But as an author, you know, you sometimes have so many projects going on, just kind of like an attorney has so many cases they got to keep in their head
and
space out. So I've got two more books I plan on finishing this year, but I've got an array of folders with different ideas to go back and write at some point, more when I retire maybe. I don't know.
Well, on the writing specifically, this is always intriguing to me. Like, what's your process on it? And I preface this question by saying this. When I read a book, especially a really good book that's good at kind of hooking you along the way, I read a lot. So I'm a big Perry Mason fan.
Yeah.
I read the original 30s novels, which are somewhat dated, but they're still good. And I was explaining when Jennifer was on here, what I like about them is even though some of the language in it is definitely dated for today, it's still interesting to me to step into that world, you know, into the 30s, like knowing this is the way they talked, this is the way they thought about things. But my point is, Earl Stanley Gardner is good at, there's a little clue here, clue here. And by the end of most of those books, I still have no idea exactly. And then, of course, Perry Mason just explains it all at the end, you know, and you're like, oh, I see. So I'm always interested in how writers are able to keep track of the plot and sort of tie you in without revealing the whole thing. And then also keeping track of characters, you know, like it's a bunch of characters. You've got to, you know, think of their voice and what they looked like. And, you know, on each, as it progresses, and you're writing this over a long period of time. So give us some insight into your process.
Chaos.
Okay.
Chaos a little bit. Actually, I'll just kind of sketch out what I want the story to be, more of a synopsis in the beginning, and then I'll develop some characters. But I have found, since I've been writing, that what works for me, and it wouldn't work for everybody, of course, is that when I start writing, it just flows. And so I'll think of a character, and it'll just pop in how I want to shape them in it. And then I'll, you know, thank goodness for a word is what I'm going to tell you, because I do a lot of little note-taking with messages and things over to the side, and I'll just, you know, go back and say, okay, I need to make sure so many chapters away that I introduce this concept in, or throw this red herring in so that people will get confused and they won't know what is going on. And with the first Paisley novel, which is what I really truly call my real first detective type of book, I had red herrings all over the place and tried to make it even the killer. I did not gender assign them at all. I just called them they and them all the way through it, because I did not want someone to guess who it might be. Because you have a limited number of people that are in the scenes, and so you're going to narrow it down too quick at some point. So it was just easier to do that, and then at the end you're going, oh, I never guessed it was that person, you know. That's what I want to do. And then to try to leave an ending, which is what I did with the second book in the series, as to, well, this is horrible, everything ended well and now it's ending bad. Kind of maybe like they did with the Harry Potters, you know, it just got everything just getting worse over time. It didn't get better always. So that's my kind of process for it. And then sometimes I'm writing on three books at a time.
Do you feel like as you write in with these characters, in your head, are they kind of alive, like they're doing their own thing, or is it definitely you're controlling the character and plot? The reason I ask this, Jennifer, before, her process is different than yours.
Oh, I bet it is.
She was saying how, like, sometimes the character would end up somewhere and she was like, oh, how'd the character get here? You know, almost like they did it themselves type thing. I just wonder if you look at it more of like you're guiding them along, or sometimes you feel like the character's pulling you along.
A little of both, if you want to know the truth. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, well, you know, Mr. Montgomery is going over here and he's going to go down the street, but what is he going to find? So I may be inserting things, and there's these other characters that might jump him or do things, you know, to pull the story along, or actually they work for this association that they're investigating, but he doesn't know that they're part of it, so it made sense to do it. Or, you know, this kid's going to come in and intervene because they're part of the family, but they're this relative that no one knows about. So this would sound good to add. So I kind of do stuff like that. But then make sure in the whole process that it ties well together when I get to the end and the whole content. I think the worst part for any writer, and I don't know what everyone else says, is the editing.
So I brought that up before too, because I
hate the editing.
So I have written, there's a kid's book I wrote. It's like for a fifth grader. I wrote about my daughter, for my daughter, but I self-published it. And then I wrote some business books. And the part that I'm not good at, lawyers are good at talking. Well, arguably, not all of them, but but when you legal write, it's not the same as like fiction writing.
Yeah.
And so like there's not dialogue, you know, there's not these different sort of grammar and literary things, tools you would use, you know. Anyway, I found it, that was for me a very difficult part, was the editing process.
It is.
Do you have help with that, or are you good at that yourself? Or
I have a 23andMe relative who is my cousin that I found about 4 years ago that we connected, and she does some of my content editing. She doesn't like go through everything and go, you didn't do this form of that. I mean, she's not that thorough, but she really gives me good feedback. Her name is Renee. Hi, Renee. And, you know, I use that, and I do a lot of work myself. I honestly will go through what I have written maybe 6 to 7 times, and I have kind of a thing. I'll read it digitally. Then I'll get it. It's pretty cheap to send it to Amazon and have them print it and send it back to you as a proof, and then do it the hard copy way. But I do it until it makes sense, and then sometimes I'll have the computer read it to me and just see how it sounds when it's being read. The other is a cost effectiveness, because, you know, if you ever have to pay somebody to do a lot of your editing, they'll charge anywhere from like 2 to 3 cents a word.
Yeah.
So it gets expensive when you're an independent author to try to cut costs. So you try to do as much as you can. But I've learned as I went along, because, you know, I'm going to write a book, and then you sit down with it for the first time and you go, okay, I'm not exactly sure how to do this. And there's all this stuff about formatting it a certain way and doing it this way. And I'm glad, like Amazon KDP, for example, has templates for you to kind of like guide you how to space things, or if I'm going to make a 6x9 book. Otherwise, I'd be lost. And then I look at books, for examples, you know, how did they do this and how did they space this? What did they drop a cap, lower a cap? How do they decide? And why does this guy always do like 5 capitalized words every time he starts a new chapter? You know, it's all these things you wouldn't probably even get in most schools.
I think in the self-publishing world, you know, there's another element that you don't have in the, I guess, privately published world, in that you do, like you're talking about, I know exactly what you're talking about. When COVID hit, lawyers were essential. However, court shut down. So we were doing a lot of virtual Zoom hearings and stuff. So I was at the house. And then, of course, a lot of when the court shut down, we're a criminal defense firm. A lot of the clients dried up and shut down. They were just citing them to court eventually, you know, and anyway, it just all slowed down. So I had all this extra time. So I had the one book, the kid's book I had written when I was a cop, super broke in a patrol car on an iPad. I literally wrote the whole thing on an iPad. And my daughter and I would kind of, she was that age at the time, we would go back and over it together and kind of come up with a story. Anyway, and so fast forward, it had sat there for years, and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and publish it myself so that it's in the world, and then if I die, my kids got it, you know,
that's
that
right,
kind of thing.
That's right. Dad wrote this.
Exactly. And it's about them. They're all in it. Yeah. But anyway, the hard part was exactly what you're talking about. And KDP does help you through it, but I didn't go there first. I had written it and then was trying to format it in. And like the cover of the book, my daughter actually drew out, it's my daughter's art. Because I thought that tied it all in together. Anyway, that was a huge thing trying to get to fit right and all that. But it is good that you have that. And I don't think people realize, hindsight, how easy it is if you have something to get out into the world. Are you looking at submitting yours at all for, like, doing any queries to publishers, or are you just keeping it in-house?
I am an irritable person when it comes to doing queries. I have done my fill of them and have just said I'm done with them.
Yeah.
I feel what I'm doing every time I sit down to send something to a literary agent group, that I am answering crazy questions. I am sending them a synopsis. I'm sending them a detail of every chapter, and then I'm answering stupid questions like, you know, what color would your elephant be if you were in a room? Or, you know, what's your favorite book? The one that really gets me, though, is, you know, what other books are out on the market that would be similar to yours? Well, why am I doing your research?
Yeah.
Why am I doing your work? I mean, you're supposed to take and look at it. And then you always get these nice little, what I call templated letters, that everybody says the same thing. We're just, you know, not interested in this, you know, type of story at this time. And you're just like, well, I just spent an hour writing all this stuff to send it to you. And,
yeah.
You know, so I've done that since I started working on these probably in 2016. I didn't even publish under my original name in 2016. I had a different pseudonym for the first two books going because I was like, well, if I really just suck at this, then people are going to say, you can't write.
Yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't until the third book I just started using my name and stuff.
Where do people go to get your, and I already know this, but I'm going to let you put it out there. If they want to buy the books, where do they go? Besides coming to Jam Books and Records, which we'll be carrying, where do they go?
You can Google me, and I pop up quite easily with the website I've got, and you can go through the website, or you put... you can type my name, Alan Hounshaw, into Amazon, and it'll pull up most of my books. However, if you're looking for the ones that are not in my name, the two books, it's Colin Kit Alexander, my pseudonym, my secret.
How'd you come up with the secret identity?
I don't know. I searched for names that most authors didn't have, so I was looking for something novel, novel for a novel. And it just kind of came out.
How did you spell it?
C-U-L-L-E-N, and then middle name, Kit Alexander.
K-I-T?
K-I-T.
At first, I thought you were doing like a double C, because, and then I thought that was a throwback homage to Superman with the LLs, because you know you got Lana and Lois and Luthor and all. Yeah,
just there's like too many L's in Superman.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned earlier how your books have strong female characters, and I think some guys can get, specifically men, can be like, I'm not interested in that. I like a strong female character as long as it's not. And I was going to talk about what was the movie I just watched. We just watched a movie.
A good example is like Aliens or Alien.
Yeah, but there's one you and I had talked about, Josh. There was a new movie, Fallout. I just finished Fallout,
Fallout's
by the way.
Fallout's incredible.
Have you seen Fallout?
I'm on episode 3.
Okay.
Get ready to start episode 3.
I just finished the last episode last night. Very good. I enjoyed it. I don't know anything about the game. I never played the game.
I don't know about the game. I know it was...
Yeah,
good. People played it at one time.
It was good. There was another show, though, that I had just watched that had a very strong female lead, and I didn't mind it. What I don't personally like on the female leads is when they cram it down my throat. It just needs to be that that's the character. It fits, you know what I mean? Like, I don't like when it's made some big deal, like, oh, it's because they're a woman. Why can't they just be a strong person, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, I appreciate you have strong female leads.
An example of done right is like Alien or Aliens or like Terminator with Sarah Connor. An example of it done wrong is like Ghostbusters 2016. You know,
I don't know that was what was wrong with that movie. I think they tried to force it. And
that's
it
what I'm saying.
It didn't feel... Work. The reason, and this is my opinion, have you seen the new Ghostbusters?
Yes, I have.
I've seen both of the two recent ones. And to me, the reason they work is they felt like the original.
Yeah, it pulled the elements, and it had some of the original characters pulled into it. This one, it was kind of an enigma, but just thrown in, see it, you know, type of thing. I didn't really have much of an opinion one way or the other about it. It was one of those ones like, oh, I've seen it, not going to see it again, probably.
Well, I was the same way with especially the most recent one. It was okay. We went and saw it, but it's not like I would call home about it. But I did feel some nostalgia with it. It's kind of like Cobra Kai. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
So I'm a big Karate Kid fan, obviously. And I enjoyed the Cobra Kai series, even though some of it's campy, it felt in a lot of ways like the original.
It was weird how it all restarted. It was just, was it on part of YouTube or Red something other?
It started as a YouTube show.
Well, I think even before it was YouTube, fans were pushing for it, because for years they had pushed how it was that Daniel was the bully. There was this whole fan theme.
Yeah, Daniel was the bully.
Yeah, and that Johnny was the victim, really.
Because
if you watch the movie, he comes up and he's kind of stealing his girlfriend, and they get into it, and it's you can see how they kind of spun it. Anyway, that was kind of a fan legend, and then that grew into, I think, the two actors got together and started working on writing it up, or would you be interested in it, and then YouTube picked it up, then Netflix picked it up, so... Yeah, very interesting.
I think they're doing a new Karate Kid movie, too.
They are. It's going to merge, I think, the reboot universe and the Cobra Kai universe.
Yeah, because I think it's
Jackie
got...
Jackie Chan and Daniel LaRusso.
I was going to say, I think Daniel's supposed to be
they're
Mr. Miyagi.
They're both going to be in it.
Yeah. It's interesting. What I liked about it, it's in the 80s. Did you ever do martial arts or anything?
I did in high school. I was horrible at it, but I did.
What system?
Taekwondo.
And that was in Kentucky?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I've done several of them. And in the 80s, you thought, we didn't have UFC stuff. So in the 80s, you thought that you learned to do this and this and this, and that's how you would fight, you know? And so in the Karate Kid movie, that's what they actually do, is they, ha, ha, they do the stuff, you know. I just like it because it's not realistic, but it's just a throwback to that 80s choreographed fight stuff.
Well, I would have been good, you know, paint the fence and sand on, sand off. My dad was good at giving me chores.
Yeah.
Never kind of transferred over for defense.
Yeah. Yeah. That was an interesting one. What was that other one we were talking about, though, Josh, that had a female in it? It's going to bug me now.
Karate Kid or something?
No. This was a newer show that was done really well with a strong female lead that I really enjoyed. It doesn't matter. My point is, like, just on an aside, I just don't like when they stuff down your throat one way or the other. I don't care. It just, to me, it flows more naturally when it is what it is. You have male and females that are strong characters and weak characters. I had a case I'm dealing with tomorrow. It deals with a guy that was just a weak person. Like, to be honest, as a person, I've watched the videos now on what happened, and it was just, didn't matter guy or girl, this person was just not necessarily strong. So anyway, it's interesting.
Everything's out there.
Yeah. I always wonder with people like you, if y'all are always psychoanalyzing everybody. My partner's wife she's a small little woman, right?
Yeah.
But anytime you're looking at her, I'm always thinking, yeah, she's thinking like this guy's crazy, or maybe I should commit this guy, or, you know, she's thinking all this different stuff.
I'm just thinking, what am I going to have for supper?
Okay, so nothing like that. I just always wonder.
No, we got to turn that off. That would drive us crazy ourselves. Yeah. I mean, we honestly have to turn it off, because all day you deal with it. It's kind of like, you know, working in your field. I mean, I'm sure you don't go home and go, oh, I can't wait to pull out another brief and read it.
Yeah. So as one good thing is, as a criminal defense lawyer, and I say this for people that are interested in being a lawyer. So most of what I do is go to court and meet with clients. I don't do a lot of writing, brief writing, or we'll do some motions, and they're usually from a lawyer perspective, they're brief. Now, we do sometimes have to do appeals, but part of the reason I'm partnered with Brian is because he's much better at that than I am, and so he does that. My biggest strength is running my mouth. I'm good at sales, and so jury trials, we just had one last week. We got one this coming week. Jury trials, which most lawyers are afraid of, is what I'm best at, because I can sell stuff. That's really the truth of it. So I have to sell my argument to the jury, whatever it is. So I'm good at that. Brian's good he's good in front of juries too, but he's good at fabricating I shouldn't say fabricate because it infers it's not true, but creating the argument, and then I facilitate.
The fine art of rhetoric.
Yes, yes. So I don't go home and I try to not read much of anything on this stuff, but I do a lot of reading personally. Mm-hmm. That's what led to the bookstore we had. And this is a question I had for you, but you've kind of already answered it. This last 2 years-ish, my wife and I have been planning it, and we opened the bookstore. Well, getting ready to open the bookstore, I started trying to read books outside of the genre that I normally read. And I normally would read, like, history, biographies, business, self-help, really dry stuff. It's what I liked. So I decided to start reading, like, what was trending stuff. And a lot of them are, like, suspenseful, romance-y, typically feminine books that I would never have read. And I started reading them. And they're really good. Like, a lot of them are really good. But that's not the observation I was going to say. The thing that I keep bringing up, even on here, that's just, I did not know. I think it's a secret that these women don't want us to know, is these books have some graphic scenes in them.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, you think it's just, like, some suspenseful romance. And I got the church ladies coming down buying this book up, you know, and it's got some stuff in it. It's like a – no, it's fine. I'm not judging them. I'm just saying it's a surprise.
So it's similar to like 50 Shades of Grey and that
– Yeah, genre. Yeah, yes. Okay. Like there's one in particular that I was talking about earlier, Fourth Wing, that I can't keep in the store. Like people are buying it like hotcakes. And I finally read it, and I feel bad because I had recommended it to this church lady that came in because it was selling so well, right? And then I read it, and man, it's got some
– scenes.
Made me uncomfortable. And I'm a grown man. But anyway, my point was, I think that genre has a lot of that in it, and it's sort of a secret. You know, like, because a lot of guys won't read it, and so the women kind of have their own little thing going with that.
I've been told by people, I said, you know, you should just, you know, like, do a pseudonym and type and just write a romance novel book. And they said, I guarantee you it would sell. And I'm like, I don't know. I've never written them like, you know, that before. And, you know, and what would I write about? And I said, well, just take what you do now and just make it steamy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Well, I'd be interested to see that, because one of the things I brought up as I've talked with people about this discovery I've had with these, again, quote unquote, feminine books, is that most male authors, and again, not all, but a lot that I have read, that'll have sex or something, you know, hot and spicy in the book, it's very direct, and it's not like a, it doesn't overpower the story. It's not like the crux of the story. It's a part of the story, you know? And then you're sort of left to your own imagination. It'll sort of say what's going on, but not, but these books, like that Fourth Wing book, it has three chapters of this one interaction between these two characters that's super graphic. And I don't think men, again, I'm talking in absolutes on it. I was surprised by it. As a man, I don't think I need it in my book.
Is it a male or a female author on the book?
It's a female author, yeah. So, but my point is, I'm curious to see if a man wrote with the idea of writing that kind of book, how that component of it would come out.
I think it's plausible.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you could still do it, no doubt. I'm just saying that I feel, because I've read, what is his name? They just did the Reacher, the Jack Reacher novels. Mm-hmm. I like those. And they have, you know, there'll be some sex in them. But it's just sort of happened. Hey, this is what they did. Yeah. And it moves on.
Moves on to the
and
story.
And I'm telling you, man, these other books, it's, I hate to keep harking on it, but I was just shocked that it was in there.
Do you think that in terms of just book sales these days, that people are reading more digital or more paperback, hardback? Where are they kind of at in that?
I think it's still probably a mix. And, you know, and I weighed that before I opened this business. I have so many people that when we were working towards this bookstore, it's a book and record store, right? Both are mediums that are questionable for the future, right? I mean, technically, records are not even considered a good medium anymore. You know, everybody does digital.
I've got vinyl at home.
Yeah, well, I knew they were coming back. And honestly, the crux of the store is books, because I feel like there's always going to be a niche for people that want to hold the book. And that's how I am. I like the book. But I read digital also. And what I found is it's split. I have people that come in and still like to smell a book and look at a book and hold a book. But there are definitely people that will read it online.
Yeah, I do an ebook and paperback and hardbook now that they allow the part.
Well, you may know then on your insight from sales, what seems to go better?
Ebook. And then, of course, as I've sold my soul to Kindle, so to speak, you get very little on the residuals or any money in terms of royalties from, you know, that. Because if you're a Kindle member, you know, basically it's on how much they read, and it's based on some other things as well on how much you get paid from it. So, you know, if you pay for that membership, you get to read a lot of ebooks for free most of the time. So I assume there might be a limit on it, but you don't make as much as an author on it. It's like, oh, wow, I got 19 cents on that book, you know?
Yeah, and they're still getting the same thing.
Yeah, they're getting out what it is. I think, you know, my ebooks, I try not to go over $5.99 on, but, you know, you're competing with everybody else. But if you're someone that's famous, that's written a book, biography of your life, because, you know, all you have to do is be someone famous and write a book. It doesn't matter if it's a horrible book and it's 300 pages of nothing.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
You can ebook it for $15.
Mm-hmm.
So
no, you're right on that. I read Britney Spears' biography, and yeah, anybody can just throw something out there if they want to.
I just wrote that in there. It's random. I knew somebody would buy it.
Yeah, yeah. I hate to say it. I read Arnold Schwarzenegger's new book that came out a couple months ago. Called Be Useful, and it was okay, but you could tell that it was basically an outline that they then plugged information in to try to turn it into a book, and it was just his face on the cover, so it's name recognition. So, you know, but that's why I like talking with all kinds of authors and all kinds of people, because, you know, like, we have a lot of musicians on here. Mm-hmm. The band that I was promoting there in the beginning is my son's band. I have two of my sons are in that band, and they're actually good. It's not just because they're my kids. I would tell them if they sucked, but I'll have a lot of, like, Terry Bell's a great example. He's a local guy, super talented musician and songwriter. He's probably one of the best songwriters I've heard. I compare him to like Willie Nelson. Like he even kind of sings sort of with that off.
Kind of a Willie Nelson type of voice.
Yeah, and he even kind of looks and acts like him. But anyway, he's just a diamond in the rough though. You know, he's super talented, but nobody knows him. You know, and that's just so unfortunate. So that's one thing locally, at least, we try to do with this platform is have, you know, not just people that are known, but that are new and upcoming and all kinds of stuff on here to maybe get, you know, some platform to come from.
I think that's an excellent idea because, I mean, it's really good. It's involving the community. I mean, when COVID was going on, I did a little podcast. It was nothing big or anything, but it was audio and it was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun just to talk to people.
Yeah, well, that's exactly why we do this. Yeah. I love bread in my mouth, and I love talking to people. And I'm always very interested, even like in what you said, sort of the backstory of how you would get from, you know, Eastern Kentucky to Halls, Tennessee. That's very interesting to me how people end up where they end up, especially Halls, Tennessee. You know, I'm amazed that you came from a smaller community than Halls.
Yeah. Bloody breath it.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to tell you something you may not know about your community, not Hall specifically, but Lauderdale County.
Yeah.
So per capita in the state of Tennessee, Lauderdale County is the highest murder rate per capita, more than Memphis. They have more murders there than they do in any other county in the state per capita.
What are they usually over?
It's usually gang-related.
Gang-related.
Yeah. And you may be able to research that some for some of your books. I find this very interesting. Dyersburg and Lauderdale County, Ripley and Dyersburg, for whatever reason in the 80s, somehow developed a connection with Chicago, with the Chicago gangs. And there's a huge, still, this, so there's this huge gang presence. I represent many of them. And we are one of the only firms in the area that is experienced enough to do murders. So we have, I think, total between Tipton, Fayette, Lauderdale, Dyer, we got something like 12 or 15 murder cases right now going, active. Which some people may not think a lot, but we're one law firm, you know, amongst everybody else that may represent these folks. Anyway, it's interesting that...
What's the age range of most of the
it's usually, you know, 18 to early 20s is usually around where it is. But it's in Ripley specifically, like, they will just drive up and shoot folks. Now, they're not random acts of violence against just like, it's not like they go up to Walmart and start shooting people. It's usually a targeted hit on another gang member. And then that gang member retaliates the next week and somebody gets shot up. And occasionally people get caught in the crossfire, but it's typically gang on gang violence, which is, most people would never think Lauderdale and Dyer County are like hotbeds of gangs.
Why? Yeah. Yeah. I've always been told, like, you know, you go to Ripley, don't go to Walmart after 10.
Maybe. I don't know. I haven't had any.
Why?
I haven't had any cases of shootings there, but definitely near the square there in Ripley, they have a lot of things go down. So
I'm telling you, that's interesting. I would have never thought. I was looking at one point of the statistics, you know, in the surrounding counties, and I was surprised that there was some, you know, criminal activity much going on in Lauderdale. It's like, and then someone starts talking about gang activity maybe 2 weeks ago to me. It might have been my barber. I was like, really? I didn't even think about that.
Well, it's like I said, I think a lot of times, even here in Covington, most places that you would frequent, you're not really in danger. You know, there are specific areas, and it's, again, not really targeted at you. It's usually targeted at other gang members. So if you avoid those areas...
Or, you know, some people are bad shots and you're nearby.
Oh, no, that's right. I'm not undervaluing the fact that there's definitely some crossfire issues, and I'm not saying it's necessarily safe, but yeah, I have in the last 2 years probably was really surprised at how much mayhem there is specifically in Lauderdale and Dyer counties. So
it's always interesting to find out something new. And
well, it kind of fits in one of those, what was the book you were just describing where it was a small town and they were there was a plot you just said that might fit perfect.
Well, I see the witch detective has like a drug flowing through it that's kind of a brimstone type of supernatural. And then, of course, there's organized crime. The devil lives in Tennessee, the newest one I'm working on that I'm about two-thirds of writing. It all takes place in Armadillo, Tennessee, western Tennessee, that's near Memphis. And so they're doing special drugs there that have all kinds of different effects on you that are big. But there's a bigger organization that wants to take him out. And there's just so much corruption, and there's bad elements. Like there's a bad henchman called the Grim Reaper that I won't say any more than that, but takes care of problems for them.
I got you. He's kind of their punisher character.
Yeah, he likes burying people alive, too.
Yeah, now that would suck.
Yeah. So.
I just finished a novel that had an element of that in it by Freda McFadden. It's another one of the feminine novels. Mm-hmm. It was called The Teacher. It's one of her newer books that she did.
The Teacher.
And it's got an element of that in it. But those, if you ever do read any, those books are pretty quick, and they got good little twists in them at the end, and it would probably be a big change from what you have read previously if you're like a James Patterson guy. Mm-hmm. And I like those kind of things that kind of open up different things that I hadn't thought about when I'm reading. But like, I would read your mystery books for sure. The ones on the witch and stuff, I wouldn't normally do it, but I would read it, one, because it's yours, and two, because it sounds something different. That,
it's on a bourbon trail, too.
Oh, well, see, there you go. That was something
that
I liked.
That makes a difference. And I'd mentioned this before, but some of the influence in just like writing more of the detective things probably comes from my wife watches a lot of BBC detective shows. And so they're always on in the background.
Yeah,
you're always following that. And I can't remember which one it is. It might be Midsummer Murders. Mm. I can't remember how many seasons. It's like 23, 28, who knows how many it is. But just all about murder and killing. That and some series called Death in Paradise.
Hmm.
But, you know, you pick up a lot. But I like a lot of those things. My favorite thing right now that's influencing me a little bit, and probably will, there's a new series, I think it's CBS. It's Elsbeth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she might have been a character in, like, one of those Good Fight series or something. But she's this quirky attorney that's sent in to do oversight from some type of thing, lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just quirky. She's like a female Columbo that solves the crime before the police department.
Gotcha.
So, but she's very weird.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like about the element is like, I like quirky characters in my books.
People sure.
that just have, they're not perfect. They're not good at everything they do. Even Paisley Hunter has her demons that she has to deal with all the time.
Yeah, I enjoy flawed characters too. And that's why sometimes I get frustrated when people are slightly right with a lot of the Marvel characters. You know, that they were more human, I guess, than a lot of the DC characters. But I look at it like this. I view DC's stuff more as like mythology, really. Mm-hmm. It's almost like American mythology. And then the Marvel stuff is more like your pulp fiction or whatever. You know, mm-hmm. your, I guess, more stuff you can connect with, more real down to earth where they're gritty and stuff. And I like the idea that like I like that Superman's not going to kill anybody. You know, I think that's a huge... I had the guy I was mentioning you to earlier that is the comic book artist and stuff. He's got he was an animator on the Batman, the animated series. He created Doug, the character Doug, mm-hmm. that was a Disney character. His name's Jeffrey Nodelman. Nice guy. Anyway, he and I have had a discussion where he doesn't like Superman. He didn't like drawing Superman. He says he's so boring because he's so powerful. You know, I mean, what are you going to do to create to have a challenge for him? And I'm like, but that is the challenge. That's the key to the character.
Something so great he can't defeat it at the time.
Yeah. To me, it's his restraint that he's able to stay in control when he could, you know, with the literally blow his breath and annihilate the majority of problems that most people would have. But he doesn't, mm-hmm. you know, and the restraint to me is what's impressive. So I was always a huge Superman fan.
I'm hoping that they don't go traditional arch villain. I'm honestly tired of Lex Luthor villain. Mm-hmm. And there's so many they haven't touched upon that I would like to see them go into a different direction.
I agree.
I think they're doing somebody called the Conductor in this one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not familiar with that character very much.
I don't know that I am either. I know that he's taken a lot of influence for this one off of... All-Star Superman,
mm-hmm.
which was a graphic... Well, it became a graphic novel.
I enjoyed the animation version of it.
I don't know if they're going to follow that story exactly, but I'm assuming some of the visuals he's taken inspiration from. So, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I'm open-minded to it. We'll see how they do it. There's pros and cons to the DCEU that they had. I agree with you that generally their animation's better than the movies.
Yeah.
But there were some pluses. You know, like, I enjoyed the Snyder cut of Justice League.
Yes, that was different. Mm-hmm. I was like, they really have this? And this is so much better than the other version.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'll ever forgive them for doing a Green Lantern. But
yeah. You know, I always wondered how you could make that. You know, one thing Marvel did well is they even took characters that you would think would never play well on screen like Thor and did well with him.
Yeah.
And what they did is they did the comic book.
Yeah.
They didn't change it up. They just put the comic book in a movie, and it worked.
And they did well up until they just started making them to
up
make
until
them.
Recently,
too many of
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
It's the, and that's what's happened. They have saturated.
Yeah.
Disney Plus is saturated, and now everybody's like, oh.
Yeah. I I'm probably the biggest comic book nerd you'll find, and there's some I haven't even seen. And I'm going to be honest, Ant-Man 2, the most recent Ant-Man.
Ant-Man 3, Quantumania.
I couldn't even watch it. Like, I turned it off. I didn't even watch
it. It played in the background while I did something else because it just didn't have the interest. You know, I enjoyed the Avengers. I enjoyed the original Thor. I enjoyed the next couple of Thors, and then it just like...
Yeah, phases 1 through 3 of the MCU were very good.
Yeah. Well, of the new stuff, I didn't mind the Ms. Marvel series. I thought it was okay. I thought they did it well. I wasn't as familiar with that character because I sort of... started falling out of the modern comic books when that character started kind of developing.
All I know is that actress's back has to be broken from carrying
that movie.
She was the only interesting part of it.
Yeah, but even the DC, that Shazam sequel, I didn't care for it.
They waited too long for that one. The kids got too old and the storyline wasn't that strong.
I liked The Flash.
You liked The Flash?
I did like The Flash. I enjoyed it. You sound like you may be one of the haters on it too. But I enjoyed it, and I even liked the nostalgia at the end where they sort of tied the different dimensions together, you know? I liked it.
I thought they went a little cheap on some of the effects that they had.
I would agree with that.
I think the intention was, you know, to try to do it that way, but then having seen the animated version of the Flashpoint version, it was like, it doesn't live up to me to that level. I was hoping to get something that level. I enjoyed it while I watched it, and it was entertaining, but I still like the animated, you know, kind of story related to it. You know, Bruce Wayne dies, and his father, Thomas Wayne, becomes Batman. I thought that was such a neat way of doing that. But I don't know. I think the only thing I'm looking forward to in terms of, like, hero world is honestly... the next Deadpool with Wolverine, just because I liked the early X-Men, and I did like, I kind of like, you know, Deadpool. He's just obnoxious and just does what he wants to do. And
we're finally getting Hugh Jackman in the
classic,
together. iconic suit.
They've been saying that they were going to get together for years, so we'll see what they do with it. But then I'm hoping it's not a big letdown either, you know, how that can be, because... they kind of did that with some of the Wolverine-based type movies, too. It's kind of, oh, okay.
Speaking of that, one of the best movies, not even superhero movies, was Old Man Logan, I think. Yeah. I thought that was great because it really played into he's aging, and they were all aging, and that's a factor that I think we neglect in life in general. You know, these people have lived this life, they were heroes, and now they're getting older. How the world views them or values them or doesn't. I enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Sad, but...
It was sad. But, I mean, sometimes I think that's appropriate, you know, for that one. It was good. I actually am enjoying and look forward to these real sort of alternative superhero shows like The Boys. I liked The Boys a lot. I was shocked by the first episode because I wasn't familiar with, I think it's Grant... what's the guy's name? Grant Morrison, maybe, that came up with it? I may be wrong. Anyway, I wasn't familiar with The Boys, and I enjoyed that a lot. I thought that was good. It was a nice – I think it's a fresh take on superheroes because it's probably accurate. You know who kind of did that before, though?
Who?
Alan Moore with Watchmen.
Yes, yeah. I liked Watchmen.
Watchmen is really The Boys before – it was just too early. People weren't ready for it, I think.
I think my favorite character in that was Rorschach. I really liked that. I think it's – Jackie Earle Haley.
I liked the Dr. Manhattan just because, like, I mean, he's omnipowerful, but he just doesn't care so much that he just walks around naked. You know, he's just.
I think he could make digital clothes if he wanted them, but.
Yeah, but he doesn't care. He doesn't care.
I'm who I am.
He says, there's one quote in there where he says something about the most intelligent scientist you have is an ant to me, or something like that. Like, you know, the most powerful person you have on the planet is an ant.
Because it's just, probably true.
Yeah. I mean, that's a, you know, it just shows he's evolved to a level where, you know, people just don't get it. But anyway, I enjoyed Watchmen, and I definitely like The Boys.
Do you Are you a Planet of the Apes follower? Do you like?
I do like those. I liked. I haven't. What was the most recent one they did?
The most recent one was War of the Planet.
So I haven't seen that yet.
I'm a huge Planet of the Apes fan.
Yeah, I watched them in the '60s, and when they had this, or the ones that came out in the '60s, watched those movies, and then they had an animated on a Saturday morning at one point, and then they had a small time window of one that was on television series. But yeah, I kind of enjoyed them. They kind of disconnect a little bit from the one that Mark Wahlberg did originally.
Yeah. I mean, I even liked that one. It's probably one of my least that favorite one too. Ones, but I enjoyed the
Yeah, I've been trying to keep how they do them in the order they're doing them. And I think, what is it? Is it the Kingdom?
Kingdom is the new one. It's going to be the fourth in the new trilogy that, fourth in the new series that they're doing. And the only difference is this time it's a different director, whereas Matt Reeves directed the previous three. Mm. So there's a chance, and Andy Serkis isn't involved this time, so it's sort of like a different team, but continuing the same storyline. So we'll just have to see if it turns out as good as those last three did.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess I should have said this in the last one, but I just thought about it. So my brother over there, Josh, does fan films and makes independent films and stuff. And he just won an award
out of
a Memphis Fan Festival thing.
It wasn't Memphis. It was Fan Film Director's Choice Awards.
Oh, excuse
online
me.
Online festival.
Either way, congratulations.
Thank you.
And that was for his Super Mario Brothers movie?
Yeah, we did Super Mario Brothers Back in the Game. It was like a 1980s buddy cop take on the Mario Brothers.
Do you mind me asking how old you are?
Huh?
How old are you, if you mind me asking?
I am 500. Okay. No, I'm not 500. I will be 59 this year.
Okay. Well, that's not old. So I'm 45. The reason I asked that is Josh is, what are you,
33?
It's so funny to me how different generations look at things. So Josh's view on our father passed away last year and was obviously a big part of our life, but he was a huge movie buff. Mm-hmm. And so when we grew up, when I was a kid, we didn't have tons of money. So in the summer, instead of vacations, we got to go see movies is what we did. Well, Josh, I was out of the house. I'm older than him, obviously, so he was kind of still a little kid, and I was gone getting my wife at the time pregnant and all this kind of stuff anyway, living. And Josh grew up there and watching these movies. But his view of, like, classic or iconic movies are more like 2000s forward, you know? So, like, his, and you correct me, Josh, if I'm wrong, but, like, his favorite movie ever, he thinks is the greatest movie was Transformers, directed by Michael Bay. Like, that's...
I just like
the first one.
Not the later
one. It's just interesting, though, because I grew up in the 80s, and so I have a different perspective on, like, what movies
that's
iconic.
That's only partially... It's only partially true. I would say in my top five, there's a lot of those 80s films, too, like Rambo and Terminator, and, you know, I mean, it's a wide range.
Well, let me ask both of you, have you all heard of The Last Starfighter?
Yes.
Yes.
I used to watch that.
I own it. I love the movie. It was...
I haven't watched it in a while, so I remember it vividly, though, and it scared me as a kid.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was little enough. Was it 83 or 4, something like that, it came out, maybe? So I was... 4, 5, 6, something like that. And when it came out, I remember my dad was into all that stuff, so we would watch it with him. You know, I watched Predator when I was 6 or 7, you know, and it scared me a little bit too. But yeah, the one alien guy, the reptilian guy, for whatever reason scared me.
Scared you?
Yeah.
The one that came and recruited him, or the...
Probably both. I
or
do
the one that traveled around with him, and there was the actual navigator.
Well, there was the one that was his friend, I guess, but that was still... I still was sort of scared of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, being a kid, even Star Wars, to some degree, the first one had parts in it that, you know, gave me pause. It was like, I used to have a recurring nightmare that my mother turned into an AT-AT and was trying to kill us. Like, it was a recurring nightmare. I don't know what that says about my psyche, but... Yeah.
I'm stomping in with the legs.
yeah. I bring it up, though, on the movie difference because, you know, you're a little older than I am, so you probably have some different view on what you would consider iconic films than I would.
Yeah.
And books and everything, too.
Yeah, it was a whole different... I mean, growing up, I read things like the Hardy Boys, Alfred Hitchcock Present type mysteries. Mm-hmm. There were just totally different books back then that you read. That in our library just didn't carry a whole lot, probably, in, you know, the 70s.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the movies, we had hardly any theaters. It's kind of like, you know, our theater closest to us was over in Dyersburg now, they don't have one, so I got to go either to Jackson or Humboldt or someplace like that to go see a movie.
Well, Atoka has one, but I don't know that everybody would recommend it.
I wouldn't.
Josh used to work there. He's great friends with everybody at that.
And the workers, but the owner, not so much.
we typically go to Wolf Chase, usually, but I'm trying to not get shot now, so now we're looking at somewhere else to go than Wolf Chase. But anyway, yeah, movies...
I haven't still tried out the Safari Drive-In yet. So
speaking of that, drive-ins, that's a whole other thing that people don't even...
Oh, we had them. That's where you took dates and made out when I was growing up.
It's a good place for it. I didn't get to go on dates there, but I do vividly remember going and watching movies at the drive-in.
Oh, yeah.
It was a big deal. And it was always funny because you're trying to slip people in the car, you know, to maybe not have to pay for all of them. And
put them in the trunk. That's when you had trunks that you could like hold a family into.
Uh-huh.
Now you can't put. I can't get just one kid in. Just throw them back there.
Yeah, Millington used to have a nice one. Covington had a drive-in too. A lot of people don't remember that. I went to the one in Millington and watched a double feature, and one of the second film was Predator, which is now my all-time favorite movie. Which again tells you a lot about my psyche. But to me,
who's your favorite character in Predator?
I mean, obviously Arnold is easy, but I like Jesse Ventura's character a lot. I mean, they're all those guys. Part of my whole deal, the whole Kicking Lawyer and the martial arts and all the stuff, is influenced heavily by 1980s action films.
Yeah.
You know, the way a man should act or what a man was going to do is like the one part where the guy's shaving and he starts cutting himself and he's like, "You're bleeding." He's like, "I ain't got time to bleed." You know, that was a positive and a negative, because I think it grew into this false sense that men can't be, you know, have emotions and stuff.
Well, I mean, Arnold had that slew of movies running in the 80s, you know, The Running Man and Commando.
They're redoing The Running Man.
Oh.
They're doing another one.
Interesting. But in my next movie, I kill.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it just kills all the way.
Yeah, well, you know, him and Stallone had a running, if Stallone would kill 50 people, Arnold had to kill 60 in the next one. They literally had a running.
Had to do that.
Yeah, death count back then.
Poor guys.
So I met Arnold a month ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I went to the Arnold Classic, his big fitness event in Columbus, Ohio, and I was there for a martial arts thing, and just by chance, I ended up getting picked to be his bodyguard in this one big center we were in. Our organization was running this martial arts tournament, and they needed somebody with law enforcement experience to help with his security. In each building, they would try to pick people from the organization, so I got picked for that building. And so that morning, I got to come in with him, walk him around, got to talk with him and talk about the martial arts. And it's really cool. I got videos and stuff of me and him together. But for me, it was, you know, obviously people have different opinions of Arnold, but my father was such a huge fan of him.
He's a big fan, huh?
He would have thought that was like the pinnacle, that I got to meet Arnold. And I was looking at him, like talking to Arnold. And of course, he's a lot older now. And I was like, it's the Terminator. Like, you know, I'm looking at the Terminator, but of course he's not now, he's older, but anyway, that was cool.
He's the exterminator now.
Yeah, more like
he's doing those State Farm commercials now.
Yeah, I almost said something to him about it, but I decided to not offend him. He is older though. Like, he's kind of scooting around. He's very like, he still knows what's going on. He's very cognizant of everything. Mentally, he's good. He's real sharp too, because people come up and he kind of joke with them. But they carried a chair with them, and so any place he went, they would set the chair and he would sit down for a few minutes as he walked place to place.
Kind of the way your icons kind of go. I mean, I'm a trackie, so I've been to at least, you know, a couple of track conventions. And so I went one year and Leonard Nimoy was there, and he was in a chair, sometimes a wheelchair. They would just tow him around. You kind of hate it, but you know, he was old and he had some health problems and stuff, but that's just kind of the way it is. And I was just thinking now, you do a Comic Con over here?
Mm-hmm.
What you all do at your Comic Cons up here? What do you all?
So it's August 23rd and 4th this year, Josh? We need to add a lower third on that. Remind me.
August
26th.
I'm looking at the wrong month. August 23rd,
24th. 23rd, 24th. Yeah, so what we do is we're trying this time to make it very comic heavy, literally like superhero heavy. But traditionally, this is the fourth one we've done. Me, Josh, and Tara Thompson at this the ice cream place over here are partnered together and run it. And it's just that we just promote the event. So we have comic book vendors come in. We do a lot of cosplay. People have action figures. We have people with different, sometimes crafts.
Well, I've been to different Comic Cons in Lexington, you know, and I always find them fun.
Yeah.
It's not so much you're there sometimes to meet the celebrities and stuff, although I've got some weird stories with them sometimes. But, you know, just watching people and how they dress. And there are people that do not need to wear spandex.
You are correct. So we got a I'll tell you that story later. I don't want to. That's another one Josh will have to edit out. But you're right. Yeah. So I want to ask you one more question, though, and then we'll start tying this thing up because I'm getting over an hour with you, which is good. It means I like you. But you said you're a big Star Trek guy. So which captain?
I really like Picard.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Patrick Stewart's character in Next Generation. And I did watch the Picard series that they did run. And I liked kind of the nostalgia tied up in the third.
Mm-hmm.
First one was a little slow, finishing out Discovery. But I will tell you, I do like Captain Pike in Strange New Worlds because that's been kind of like a little gem that's popped out of the Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it. They mm-hmm. do it in the format as the original series, and so you almost pretty much have a different story every time an episode loads.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas most of the other ones have been the continuing
style
all the way through. But yeah, I think Picard's my favorite, but you know, Pike is growing on me pretty strong. You know.
Yeah, I like the Pike character too. My favorite's James T. Kirk though. Still, like
I've met William Shatner.
Yeah, I did.
Well,
I've heard
he's awesome. I've heard that he wasn't always the nicest fella to people. But
I took my oldest son to a Star Trek convention in Vegas, probably in 2010. And we went and did a photo op with him and Nimoy. And when we got into to Shatner, they said, go over and stand by him. Don't touch him. Don't talk to him. Take your picture and leave.
Yeah, that was basically my experience when I met him.
Yeah, I generally am not big on the meeting the folks at them either. I like actually looking at comic books and stuff. And you'll see in my office, it's a lot of like custom Superman art that I've gotten mm-hmm. from different people. But we did, Josh and I drove to the Nashville Comic Con a few months ago to meet Chuck Norris. And we literally got there in line first, and I was the first or second one to get. I was first, wasn't I? Was first
no,
or second?
I think you were. I think there was one guy.
Second.
For
I
me,
was second in
I
line.
Was first, and then you were the.
Okay, either way, second or third to meet him. But he was the opposite of that. And he was old now. Like, he was struggling to get around. He sat in the wrong chair. They moved him. But when I got up to him, he could tell that it was such a big deal to me. Like, I bowed to him, and my whole kicking lawyer and martial arts schools and everything is because I was, you know, always been a huge Chuck Norris fan. And he took the time to kind of ask me about it. And, you know, it wasn't a rush thing. You could tell that he appreciated that it was a big deal to me.
Mm-hmm.
And now, it was also early in the day. You know, we were the third one up. So, but he signed my stuff. I got him signed all my and then I kind of pissed him off. I said, you know, Chuck Norris was in the Bruce Lee movie. I forget which one it was.
Enter the Dragon?
No, it wasn't Enter the Dragon, and it wasn't. I don't think it was Return of the Dragon. But the one where they fight at the end. And it's a great filmed fight scene because they even worked in, like, the cat part in it. And it was really cool. Anyway, they warm up, you know, and then they fight each other. And anyway, a lot of people don't know this, but the backstory is Chuck Norris, Bruce Lee asked him, it's in his movie, to be in it and be the bad guy. And he's like, well, you know, I'll do it, but it's got to be a tie. You know, he's like, I'm not going to lose. And he's like, they go back and forth. He's like, well, it's my movie. You know, you kind of got to lose. And the deal was he wasn't going to kill him, though. You know, he would win, but he wouldn't kill him. So then in the movie, Bruce Lee beats him and then jumps up and lands on him and kills him, right? And, of course, that was a cut, and Chuck Norris didn't really know that. So there was always bad blood for a while because he got killed in that movie. So because I'm an idiot, Chuck Norris is being very nice. He's signing my stuff. And I got the picture hanging in there that I had him to sign of him and Bruce Lee fighting, right? So he's signing it. And I said, you know, by the way, Mr. Norris, I said, that was really nice of you, you know, to let Mr. Lee win that fight like that. And so he stops signing, and he looks up at me. And his son comes up and goes, yeah, we don't talk about that movie. And I was like, dang, it's been like 60 years, and he's still holding a grudge about it.
He's got a grudge.
He's still upset, yeah. So anyway, but it was still great to get to meet him. So
oh, yeah.
For me and Josh, the only one left that I've got to meet that would be iconic would be Stallone, because he kind of finishes the 80s superhero trifecta for
better,
me.
Better get on that soon.
Yeah.
These
well,
guys
he's,
aren't getting young.
He's doing better than the rest of them, I think. But he doesn't do signings. Like, you can't really catch him anywhere. You got to catch
no
him
signings
out.
At all, not even virtual, where you just get an item.
I mean, he doesn't need the money, obviously, and I just don't think he does it. It's very rare if he does.
Now, those big ones, once they reach to a certain level of fame, they just don't see the point in
There's not a lot of them that go to Comic Cons or go to places to sign. They just don't. So you'll never get those signatures or never get those photo ops. So I am surprised sometimes who does show at them. So,
Well, you know, a lot of people make a living off that. These Comic Cons have a whole circuit of people that's what they do. That's how they make their living, is going to the different conventions. And we go, Josh and I go to a lot of them. We're such super nerds. I mean, not only do we host we don't make any money on the event. We host the event really to try to have something for the community. Mm-hmm. And I think those conventions are a good outlet for people that are kind of maybe not socially accepted a lot of times on stuff to get to go be themselves. So it's like a judgment-free zone. There is some cool people watching there. You know, like I'm a big fur. I like to watch the furries. I think the furries are interesting. You know what I'm talking about? They dress up like animals in full mascot suits.
Oh, yes.
And then there are certain activities that sometimes we hear they may do outside of that.
Now I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So that's interesting to me. But anyway, I'm a libertarian, man. So you do you, I'll do me. It's all good. I support it. So.
Well, I have to tell you sometime about the guy wearing the toga at the Star Trek convention that should wear something under it.
Okay. Well, with that, why don't you tell everybody one more time how they can find you and your books and everything?
You can go to Alan Houndshell and Google that, and you will pull up my website, most likely the first one, because I use a website, pay for that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go to Amazon, you can do that. Or you can just come on down
this
weekend and look at some great vinyls and books down there and meet some local people and we'll talk to you. We're not shy.
Yeah. And of course, this is going to air, it sounds like, next week, but we will hopefully have some of his books in stock, and you can come check them out at the bookstore. As always, I thank you guys for watching. I thank Alan for being with us. Please like, follow, subscribe to content, all that good stuff. Share it. Make sure folks see it. Do the dances on the TikTok. If you haven't already, download Inside My Head by N.A. The Band. Two of the guys in that band, at least, I like a lot. Actually, I like them all. But anyway, check those guys out. It's a free album, so please download it. Michelle Allen, if you're trying to buy, sell, rent, lease real estate, she can help you out pretty much anywhere in West Tennessee. So give her a holler. She's a local Cry Like realtor. And then Mason's High Octane Martial Arts is where I'm going right after this, actually, to teach class. It is located in Covington for 30 years, and we have a second location in Millington. Just visit masonsmartialarts.com, and we do traditional martial arts and some MMA kickboxing stuff. And then, as we've been talking about, Jam Books and Records is located on the square in Covington. It's open Monday through Saturday. You come check us out. We're open Saturday late. We got lots of books, lots of records, and lots of cool stuff for everybody. And then if you need help with your online presence, branding, video, commercials, etc., just visit masonitemarketing.com. All right. So appreciate you guys watching. We'll see you again on another Law Talk. Until then, keep kicking. Thanks for watching, guys. Just remember that this is not legal advice or investment advice or business advice. This is for fun and entertainment purposes only.